Welcome, pudding people, to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding. I am your host, Ken Seymour. Today, I am excited. I have a fantastic guest. Not only is she an actor, a director, an artist, I'm assuming she is a master of the uneven parallel bars, Alessandra Williams. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
How are things on the other side of the country today?
Really nice. It's been super hot this last week, crazy heat waves, but today it's it rained this morning, and so it's really beautiful today.
A little bit of a break, a little of
And New York is just amazing. I grew up here, and I lived in LA for a while, but then I came back because I just love the city. Just it gives so much inspiration everywhere you go, and so I've been really enjoying my time back here.
Now, I have to ask, just to start things off, and you know, I kind of implied it a little bit in the intro. I saw that you were originally a gymnast. Is that accurate?
Yes, for a very long time, from about 3 years old to 16 years old.
Wow.
So 13 years from the beginning of my life. And I did, I got to an elite level in gymnastics. But at 16, I was really had the bug for acting, and I felt that I was very strong and that it kind of didn't fit so much for being an actor as much. I mean, I guess it could if you wanted to play a certain role, but I wanted to just sort of like lean out and just be less strong. So I'm like, I think I have to step aside. And also I knew that there's not a whole lot of longevity. Like after 13 years, my body was really hurting anyway already. So I sort of stepped into acting from gymnastics, but I was captain of my team. We had so much fun. I broke my arm in half in like with my own knee when I was 13. And I was like begging to continue to compete. And I competed with my broken arm. I just did everything hands free.
That's ouchy. I don't like that.
I know.
Well, before we get into the acting side of things, since you did this so long and you competed at such a high level, what is your most prestigious title that you won? Or maybe more importantly, what is your favorite takeaway that you had from being involved with something that has that kind of history?
Yeah, the takeaway was just like hard work and dedication, because I was like drilled into my mind, all this repetition, it creates freedom. And so I used that in my acting. And I feel like because of that upbringing, it really brought me into being an actor and being able to work under pressure in front of a lot of people. That was the biggest takeaway.
Yeah, I would have to assume that after being in front of an entire auditorium full of people staring at you doing the one thing, a handful of people in a boom mic, not such a big deal.
Not such a big deal, yeah. It was a really easy transition. And actually, my first couple acting jobs were commercials where I played a cheerleader. And so I was doing all these flips and kicking my legs around, and they were like, you got the part. And so the first three auditions I ever did, I booked all of them, and they were all for cheerleader parts.
Okay, you got to tell me what those commercials were.
One of them was with Larry Fitzgerald for NFL. This is SportsCenter. He's like the most famous wide receiver. And when he was on the Cardinals and they were like in the top, it went for like 8 or 9 years while he was like at the top of his game. So that was an amazing commercial to do. He like catches me falling off the wall, and because he catches everything,
absolutely.
He catches the ball no matter what. So he also catches the cheerleader. And the other one was for Pontiac, which I think went under like GM since then. It was a long time ago. And I was doing like toe touches and my pom poms would explode. I was doing pyrotechnics and my shoes would explode because everything was so hot. Like it was like the hot new car, like this is what it is. And then I would jump around. And the other one was for a sports clothing brand called CWX Support Web. And it was like this web that would go around your legs. So I was like cheerleading and wearing those. So
I can
it was
definitely,
fun.
I see two of the three of those make complete sense. And the other one is just,
yeah, the one with the explosions don't.
That's a little different.
And it was actually one of my earlier, it was like the first thing I ever did those commercials. And so I had no idea what I was doing was considered a stunt. You know, I didn't get stunt pay for it because I wasn't in the union. And they had me like dipping my arms in like gel, the fireproof gel, and my legs. And I'm doing this whole thing. And I'm like, I told my manager after, I go, do you know that I was exploding all day? And she was like, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
so
that's a little
I think
rough.
We ended up getting a little something for that.
I'd hope so. Now, you say you got bit by the acting bug. Was that because someone or something inspired you, or because you were exposed to being a part of a production and it just kind of took?
Kind of a combination. I mean, when I was a kid, I started making movies with my home video camera, and my father and I would write scripts, and he would like shoot me like in these like situations. And I was like probably 6 years old, but we were just playing. But that's where it started. And then when I was maybe 8 or 9 is when the Titanic came out, and I went to see that with my grandmother, and she was like, you can be her. Cause I'm like, oh my God, I want to be Rose. And she's like, you can, she's an actress. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she like made me understand what that is and that it's possible. And she put me into theater camp that summer. And we did Midsummer Night's Dream, and I was like a tree, and I was so mad that I couldn't speak. I had no speaking lines cause I was too young, and everyone else was a little older, and they like were the leads of the play. And I just remember being like, oh, I can't wait till I can do that. So that's when the bug really got me. But I started going into gymnastics and really succeeding there. So all my focus was in that. And I always knew like one day I would be doing something with the acting. And then when I was 16 and I stopped doing gymnastics, I immediately went into acting school in New York City.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, and you, you've studied with a variety of different people, including, didn't I see that you were with the Upright Citizens Brigade for a while? Is that accurate?
I had worked there. I would say the more better place that I studied was the act is, and I currently go there all the time, is the Actors Studio. But I did do Upright Citizens Brigade for sketch comedy, improv, and sketch writing. And I did that in LA and in New York, but it was a totally different muscle. I definitely enjoyed it, but I really enjoyed the Actors Studio the most because it's like the method, and it's just like the most incredible actors and peers there to work with, that it's just on another level. It's amazing. It was my most proud moment. I felt like I won the Oscar when I became a member, because the audition process is extremely rigorous. It's like they make you audition again and again, and you have 5 minutes to show an arc in a scene, you know, two person scene, and you have Al Pacino and Ellen Burstyn and Alec Baldwin and Stephen Lang, all these huge, great talents, all there, just them. They're the judges.
Ouch.
Watching you. And so like that's like to work in front of them specifically is like its own hump to get over. So when I got accepted after a bunch of auditions, I knew it happened too. Like when I finished the audition, Martin Landau was there too. He was like in the front row coughing throughout my whole scene, and I didn't let it told me, and it was just, we were so in the moment. And when I walked out that door that day, I was like, oh, that was it. Like, I know that was it. And then they came out and they told me right away, they're like, you were accepted, you're in. So, because once you're in, there's no money exchanged or anything. And you're just like in with all the A-lister Academy Award winner, Tony winners, everything. And like there we're sharing and exchanging the craft, like with all just passion is the only thing driving it. So it's pretty magical. Really happy about that.
Well, yeah, that'd be crazy.
Yeah.
The amount of pressure at, in that kind of an interview style process, that's, it's bad enough when you're in front of somebody you don't know, but when you're in front of legends, that's got to be just so much to try and knock you out of your moments that you're trying to be a part of.
Yeah, it's the greatest lesson actually, because once you can do that, and I think that's why they do this way, because it's so not the way our work works. It's actually, we're all about like trying anything and like failing beautifully and just do whatever you need to do. But in that setting, like you have to come like ready to go, finished product. And it's like, so not what the studio is, but if you can do that, then you can work professionally. You know, that's what they, how they see it. It's like, if you're going to be like an actual professional actor or not, and you have to be able to do that. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Do you have a favorite bit of advice that you were given, or a specific skill that was taught to you by someone that still sticks with you, maybe more than anything else?
Yeah, the first thing that comes to my mind right now, there's so much, but benevolent disdain. One of the mentors over there, Mark Kemble, the late Mark Kemble, he passed away, but he was so amazing and so generous to actors. He's a director. And he said that you have to have benevolent disdain as an actor, which is like, you could, some actors, they'll do great work and everyone will be like, this was really, and they're like, oh no, I don't know. Or, you know, and be like very too not owning of the work, too shy. And then there's the ones that are very arrogant and sort of like undeserved arrogance, where like they're really just okay, but they're like, don't you tell me what to do. Don't you know, I'm this. And like he would say that you have to have a piece of both of them in you all the time as an actor, where you have that sweetness and you, but you also have that, I'm like, I don't need you to tell me. Like it's like this combination and less one or the other, because those like that's a weak one or the other.
Think
So that really stands with me all the time. I always think about that.
that seems to make sense, because there's so many different perspectives going into the creation process. You're coming at it from one side, the director's coming at it from another. There's going to be times where you know, no, my approach here, this is the right approach. I know this is right. And you've got to defend your performance. But sometimes you have to be able to accept, it's like, well, maybe there's a different direction to go.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be able to be open, but in a strong way, like in it with ownership.
That's a really interesting phrase. I'm going to have to remember that one.
Yeah, benevolent thing.
So you did your commercials and you're in, you've gotten to be
I'm
part of.
sorry, I think it's undeserved arrogance and benevolent disdain. I think those are that. Sorry, but go
Hey,
on.
no worries. We're
It's
in
been a minute since I heard him say it.
we're in no hurry here. Not unless you are.
No, not at all.
So you've done your commercials, you've started to train, and where's the moment that you felt, all right, I'm ready. It's time to get that first big thing. Did it happen like that, or did you just happen to get a part and you've just kind of been rolling with them? Because I've seen so many different entries into the main
Yeah, there are
industry.
so many different entries. No, I was very naive. And because I had booked all the work right away, everyone was like, this is going to be so hard. It's so competitive. And I'm like, but I never didn't get the part. So I think that that's not true. Like, I just believe that it's not true. So I always worked. I think the moment that I knew, like, wow, like, here I am, is I did this Bollywood movie. And I was in India, and it was one of my first like huge studio films I ever got. And it was like the first big thing after doing like tons of commercials and like independent films, like from the film schools. Like I would do like NYU Film School students, movies and stuff. And when I was finally on the set for that movie and like seeing the humongous crew and the humongous, like everything, it was just so out of body at the time. I was like, wow, like I'm here and this is happening. And like, I'm now on camera, I'm sitting, I'm rehearsing, I'm doing the work. And it hit me in that moment because I was like, wow, you can do this. And then when I came home from that, I got signed with Innovative Artists, which is like such a great agency. So, and they started sending me into like huge auditions. Like I auditioned for The Wolf of Wall Street 3 times.
Oh.
I know, for the first wife, not for the Margot Robbie part. So I was like in these huge audition rooms with these amazing casting directors. And that too was like a sort of, like you can do this, like this is working. And only years into my work did I start seeing what it feels like to have rejection, because I didn't have it in the beginning. When I moved to Los Angeles is really when I started not getting roles as easily. And I think it was that there's so many more actors out there. Like here in New York City, there's just who's here and we all know each other and there's like a core group. And so when you get cast, you're like not going up against 1,000 people. And I think that sometimes it's so easy to get lost in the sauce in LA, which is another reason I sort of came back here. I worked a lot in LA, but it wasn't ever through the audition process, ever. It was all like referral based work that I got there.
Well, that's also kind of nice though. When it's a referral, then you kind of.
Yeah. Oh, that's the best.
Built in trust.
That's
and
the best.
Yeah. So what skill did you develop for those of us, or for those listening, I should say, that, you know, eventually want to become an actor? How do you deal with that rejection?
Well, I feel like you have to think of it almost like as a salesperson, and that you're a product and that you're selling this product, and try to take the emotion out of it and take like the need to have the job out of it. Like you don't need it. You just enjoy doing this, because then it's just fun. And like when you put pressure, it takes away, it creates tension, and tension cuts you off from creativity. So like you have to just feel free. And so I think being free, being open, and like I was saying, like you're a product and it's a salesperson. Like good salespeople don't care when they hear no. They just keep going to the next person until they know, like each no is closer to yes. So it's like, if you could think like that a little bit and just know that it's never, as long as you do all of your work. So that's another thing that I would tell young actors is like, you should show up and be as prepared as you can so that you can never use the excuse of like, oh, maybe I could have prepared more. Because when you do that, you could feel really bad about yourself and become less driven, because then you start thinking, oh, well, I wasn't good enough, that's why I didn't get the part. Rather than like, I know I was good. I know I did everything I could to be the best I could be in that moment. And I can leave happy and knowing that like I acted today and I did a great job, and I move on.
It's almost like sports.
Yeah, it is. That's probably why I feel that way, because of my sports.
Yeah. Asking this, you know, you're into the acting side of things. As a preface to a coming question, are you by chance a fan of comic books? If you can't tell, that's a lot of what we talk about on this particular podcast. So,
a fan of what? Comic books?
Comic books, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a fan of comic books. Like, I love Marvel.
Right.
And I love DC Comics.
Now, were you a fan before you got your role on Agent Carter?
I was. Yeah. Yeah. I always liked superhero movies. I thought that they have like a great story, like for young kids, like somebody's there to save the day. Like it gives hope,
right?
You know? So I really like that whole premise of like what superheroes do. I'm not like huge into big blockbuster movies personally. I'm more into like true life stories and stuff like and thrillers and stuff like that. But I do really like them, and I definitely was excited when I got that Marvel role because I was just like, oh my God, this is gonna be like a whole different experience. And shooting for them, I think they're Disney. Yeah, it was Disney. So it was like we were shooting at Disney, and shooting on the lot there and stuff was pretty cool.
Well, and that particular show, which is super fun to begin with, and I was kind of sad to see it go as soon as it did, being a period piece, the whole aesthetic is different. The wardrobe is
Oh yeah.
so much fun. Did you get to
I
really play
love
with
it.
that?
Totally. Yeah, I had like a cone pointed bra and like this pink dress with a little necklace locket, and they did pin curls, little tiny pin curls in the hair. And like the way I walked with like a little, because the women back then always had pencil skirts on or skirts in general, but at work a lot of times it was like a pencil skirt. And so the steps are really small and stuff. So like I took all of that into account, and sort of like the tone of voice was a little more classic.
Yeah, I had to love
Yeah.
your the name for the role as it's listed is Bombshell Secretary. It's like, well,
I know.
if you're going to have a more generic name, that's an excellent generic name to have.
It is an excellent. Well, the show, the episode itself was about sorry, it was about detonating a bomb. So the fact that I was the bombshell secretary is,
Pretty
it goes
awesome.
with the show, with the episode, I think.
What did you think of working with Haley Atwell?
She's so sweet. She was really lovely. We were very professional and very fast. Like we weren't really hanging out and like doing much. We were just like in, do scenes, rehearse, block it, edit, go. D-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-go. Yeah. It moves so fast on those sets because it's TV. TV is like, you don't get like a lot of takes. You got to get it right away, one or two, and you're done usually. So, yeah.
So you didn't get to form a lasting friendship. I was hoping for this. Like, yeah, we hit it off. We had drinks. We still call each other. No.
I do have that with like my whole cast from How to Make It in America. That was the HBO series, and
Nice.
we all are very close friends.
That is super cool.
Yeah.
I
Yeah,
love to hear
sometimes that
that.
happens.
When it just everybody bonds, how do you feel that gel happen when you were on the
Oh my God, it's really according to the combination of people on set. Like sometimes it's that way and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just the very core actors that get like that, and then everyone else that comes in is not really privy to that and that level of connection, so they're not always together. But I felt it a lot on How to Make It because we worked like I was in a lot of episodes, so I was there often, and we worked so constantly all day, working so hard. And so then after we would wrap at night, we would all go out to dinner together. And on the weekends, we would like go to a club and get a table, and the entire cast is like dancing. And there's some crew people there, and some the directors come, and it's just like fun because everyone gets to really know each other. And then we get back to work, and we're like very serious, and everyone's at work again. So it would be like a reward for everyone's hard work for us to get together. And that just, I don't know how it started. I think it started because Louis Guzman lived on the Lower East Side, and we were shooting on the Lower East Side often, or Soho. And so we would like go to his neighborhood spots afterwards, and everyone wanted to stay hanging out with Louis.
He seems like a
So we would like
riot.
kind of go with Louis wherever he wanted to go.
Is he as
What?
is it, he seems like a riot. Is he as funny in person as he seems like he
Oh
would
my
be?
God, he is like such a trickster. He always is acting. Like that's one of the things that he does. Like he'll like come up with some crazy story and start telling you like, my friend Johnny over here, he did this, this, and this, and this, and this. And you're like, what? That's crazy. And then he's like, wait, don't tell him when he gets in the car. And then he gets in the car and you're all like, You know, and then like later you find out that it was just some joke that he made up. He would do stuff like that. And I'm like, Louis, you always get me. Like, you're like a prankster. And he's like, that's how I learned acting.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh. He goes, yeah, I just joke with people and I see that they believe me. So I'm obviously connect. I was like, that's true. That's like his training.
Well, you've had an opportunity to be in several projects with a lot of very funny people. I don't know if you had a chance, because I did not see this particular film, but I have to ask because this is one of my favorite comedians that sadly is no longer with us. But in Gender Bender that you were in, Gilbert Gottfried was in that. Did you get a chance to interact with him at all?
I did. Yeah, he is like that guy. Like that you see, like with that voice and everything, he was really fun. I love that you pointed out that movie, because that's one that like is not, it's like a little culty movie. yeah, a lot of it's really funny actually. It's really kitschy and funny. My scenes were with Eric Roberts.
He seems
so.
Very
I was
cool.
Mostly with him, but I did meet Gilbert one day on set. He was really cool and funny.
Yeah, Eric Roberts seems like the kind of guy that's going to be, I'm going to talk slowly, clearly.
yeah, he does so many movies that I think for him it's just like show up, do it, go. Like it's like a robot.
It's
like
Tuesday.
Because he's like programmed to do this, and that's what it felt like with him.
Oh, now, okay. So I ask this a lot of
times. I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, he's wanted because he's got that
skill.
Like
a great robot.
Yes. Yeah.
Like you know what you're going to get, and it's always going to be good.
Right.
That's kind of more what I mean.
So a lot of times, you know, you might be interacting with one or two names that are, you know, big mm-hmm. names in a specific project, sometimes mm-hmm. more than that. But the last one before we kind of get to something a little more current that I wanted to ask about is your time on Spencer Confidential, because that casting was stacked. I mean,
yeah.
Just a ridiculous amount of talent that was on that. What was it like being involved with so many people that have just that level of skill?
It was really incredible. I mean, working for Pete, I've worked with him a bunch of times. He always uses the same crew. So it does, again, feel like that family feeling, which is interesting because it's also Steven Levinson. And Lev did How to Make in America, and he also did this Spencer Confidential. Yeah. And I think that the acting is like, 25% of the part when I was there, because I had my days were like separated a lot. So I was coming to the set and watching a lot of the time, which was really nice. And just watching everybody at work just felt like, I mean, at this point it felt pretty normal. I didn't imagine that they were all like at such a level. I just kind of felt like we were just all together doing our work. But it was nice to see Eliza Schlesinger do some work, because she's normally a stand-up comic.
She's funny.
So to watch her sort of transfer that into like a scene and stuff, I thought I was really entertained by watching her. And Mark is always just really nice, but again, quiet and focused. Like in between his shots, he's sort of like sitting in a lounge chair on the side.
Yeah.
Like just meditating sort of to like conserve energy, but it's so much energy, you know, you really need to conserve in between. You can't like be doing small talk chatters or anything.
Well, you didn't just have the chance to interact with like one big comedian on that, but Marc Maron was also involved with that.
Yeah. Marc Maron. I went to dinner with him too in Boston. He was really, really nice.
Oh, I always like to think of him as the comics comic. So if you're really a fan of stand-up, he's the one to kind of look at.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of him, and I love his podcast too. And he's very opinionated guy, which I like, and he brings that energy to his roles, you know, where he's like really strong-minded, which I really like.
it's easy to act off.
He's got quite a look.
You can get an easy, it's like, I already know how I'm going to react to this. Okay, I'm ready. All right, finish your sentence.
Yeah.
And now. Just go.
Yeah. There was actually a scene that I was not directly working with him, but I was in the scene where he's like showing this footage of me getting murdered on the TV, on the laptop, to Mark Wahlberg. And they're both like in the inside of a boat and like showing him. And there I am like on the screen getting murdered.
That's gotta be trippy.
I always am getting killed, or my family's getting killed. It's like a thing that's been happening.
Well, that's the hero's journey, isn't it? That's the whole thing. Somebody has to die to motivate you. It says you got to get out. The person you liked is gone. Now be a vigilante.
Yeah, that's usually what happens. That's what happened in Spencer. Like, his whole job was to investigate my murder.
Yeah.
Gloria Wisniewski. And that she was based on a true character, too.
Really?
Like a real person. Yeah, she was like this local Boston college girl who was standing up against this like mafia that was trying to take some certain things over in the local Boston community, and she was like protesting against them all, and they killed her.
That's sad.
I know.
But
really sad.
But still a really fascinating something to kind of grab onto for the performance.
Yeah, when I was doing the role, I was thinking about her all the time. The whole time I was just thinking, like, I wouldn't be here if your life didn't exist, and like, I just want to like pay homage to her. And like, that took a lot of pressure off too, because I had this scene where I sort of had to react and cry like really quick and get like freaked out, go from like being super happy to freaked out like in a second.
That's
and
hard.
Sometimes that stuff can be a little daunting, but there was something about like her reality that's what she was living. Like, it made it very easy.
Man.
Like, it just was like, it just went in and out. But also, I don't know if I should give this away. I have like another acting thing. I know. It's like such a good one. So Barbara Bain taught me this. She was Martin Landau's wife,
mm-hmm.
and like in Mission Impossible. And she's like 92 now. She's still around and she's amazing. Just a couple years ago, probably right before I shot Spencer, she was telling me about how she would stay in the character's mindset in between the shots in order. And she would take in the surroundings of the crew as though they're in her scene. So she wouldn't be like denying that they're there. Rather, like, for example, her house is burning down, right? And they're like getting ready to do the shot. And like, people are touching her up with makeup and doing things to her. And instead of like getting separated from where her character is, getting distracted by all that, she's looking around at all the crew people, and they don't seem to care that her house is burning down. And it's like, she's like allowing that to affect her. Like, how come nobody cares what's happening right now? And allow that reality of what's going on, like, seamlessly lead her into when they say action, and then she's like there. And so I did that too in that moment, because I remember they were all poking at me and doing things, and I was about to have this moment. And I just was like, I remembered Barbara Bain in that moment, and I was like, right. This guy is like, he's like responsible for everything that's happening here. And that woman over there, I'm suspicious of her. Like, I was like, you know.
That's actually pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
I love that.
It really, that's why I was like, I don't know if I should give away my trick. It's a good trick.
It is a good trick.
It's good for actors because it helps keep you focused. And when you're focused, your concentration is high, then you can be very specific. And when you're specific, you get a great performance. When you're like general and like all over the place, it becomes watered down and generic and sort of typical, like just like what anybody would do. Anybody would think, oh, it's like this, rather than bringing like authenticity,
mm-hmm.
like your own way.
Still pretty trippy.
Yeah, it is trippy.
Speaking
That's why
of
I love
trips.
Method acting. There's so many things you can do.
See, this is for the segue. Speaking of trips.
Yeah.
Your one of your newest films to come out on Tubi as of June 20th was Lissa's Trip. And that just the general description of that seems like it is, has the potential to be so wacky, but at the same time affecting. What is it? What is it about? What is your role in that?
Okay, so Lissa's Trip is sort of like a loose odyssey. So the odyssey is like kind of like a wandering, right? And so this girl, was a child star and sort of is floundering in her career. And she comes and stays at her best friend's house, me, Alex. And she gets this call for this huge audition to replay the role that she played when she was a kid, but as an adult now. But they still want her to come in and do a test. So like, it's a big deal. And that morning she accidentally takes a bunch of acid from my house and goes, like, is insistent on going to this audition no matter what, and ends up like wandering around every borough and area of Los Angeles looking for Burbank. And during this whole thing, she's like tripping so hard.
Oh.
And having these like out of body experiences, and it's just like very reflective, and it just shows like a lot of strength and like to like keep going for the art, like don't give up, and that's sort of the tone. And I played Alex, who's like the best friend, painter, mom, wife character, and then I also played Millie the macaw, which was like this vision, this part of her trip where like these birds come to her and start talking wisdom to her and are flying around her and stuff. And so there's a couple birds and I was like this beautiful, very colorful macaw. And so I really loved doing the voiceover for that because I like study the macaw's voice and what they do. And I learned that they like mate for life. So they're very romantic, in my opinion, if they're mating for life. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to give her a romantic tone and like something really pretty and elegant. So I put this whole voice on for her. And the director was like, wow, there's no such thing as small roles, is there? I'm like, definitely not.
So in an acid-laced Los Angeles kind of environment that is the Odyssey, what represents the Scylla and Charybdis in this particular journey?
Well, there's some like, there's this agent and then there's this photographer and there's like all of these people that she sort of runs into that I would say picked up on a lot of those characters, like a lot of battles that she had to get through with those people. Yeah. And her mother. Yeah.
You
have to see this movie. It's very twisted. There's so many twists and turns that it's kind of like, I don't want to give away too much.
Right, right. What was your favorite? There's always, for me, the most fascinating parts are the behind the scenes, the production pieces. I mean, we get to see the final work, and that's great, and it's wonderful. But I like to imagine myself in the process of making the film. Do you have a moment from the production of this that you've taken with you that you have as a cherished memory or that's just really weird and I didn't know that was going to happen sort of a thing?
I think the cherished memory for me was that I was working with one of my really close friends, the girl who plays Lissa. We were like very close, especially around that time because we were like working every day together. And it was a lot of fun being able to like play with your friend. That's what it felt like. And so I'll never forget that. And also I loved the director because he was like doing like this as a passion project. Like he does a lot of big shows and in Canada and is a director for TV there. And this was sort of something that he just took on his own and like just decided like, I'm going to do this. And he did everything. And I think that that really inspired me as a filmmaker, because I'm filmmaking a lot now, and seeing that, like, you don't always need the whole studio to have every crew member there. You can make art still, like, on your own, and people can receive it and enjoy it and like it. And he sort of showed me that that's possible. And I think it made me know that I can do the things that I've been doing.
Speaking of art, you are an artist yourself, in multiple ways, but you've created art that you have given away for charitable purposes. So I have to ask, what kind of art do you create? Are you a painter? Are you a sketcher? What style do you
like? Actually, both those things. So I paint and I sketch. The charcoal art was, I did like a bunch of large charcoal drawings of like these elephants and tigers and rhinos, because we were saving them from poaching for this, for the charity. And I also donated my house at the time. And so we had like this huge party at the house, and we had another artist come with his paintings that were animal driven. And then I did all these special, his paintings were like 20 to 50,000. And I did mine for like 1200 to 2000 each. They were quite big, and like all the money went to charity. And those were the ones that all went. And I think it was just because it was like more reasonably priced,
right,
and more like easier for someone to just take, rather than like the big piece of art, which was like, it has to be very specific for your house. So we ended up through that, because the people had to buy tickets to come to that one too. We adopted a baby elephant that was, her mother had been poached, and she wouldn't have survived in the wild by herself. So we got her saved and like brought her to an animal sanctuary through that party and through those sketches. And then I did another series of sketches when I wasn't even there, and I just shipped them over to her. Heidi Jo Markell is the founder of Stop Poaching Now. And so I started there. And then I also did some for like the LA Ballet. And, some inner city kid things here. But I would like to do more than I've done, but it takes time. Like, yeah, everything takes time. So just all in good
so
time.
Many hours in the day, yeah. But it's got to feel wonderful to have a positive effect on the world around you.
Yeah. I mean, I try, and I think we should all try where we can. And, I think it's important for everybody to like take part in whatever kind of charitable act they can, because we all have the ability to, and it doesn't matter, like, as long as everyone, like, which one you're doing, as long as everybody's working with something, then eventually it's all going to get filled in. And our planet in particular, the reason I, with the animals and the poaching, is because we need them for, not only because they're beautiful beings and they deserve to not be killed, but also if they're gone, like, our whole ecosystem gets destroyed. Like, the elephants, when they walk, they pave a path, and that path brings water to different areas. And so, like, it's a part of the ecosystem. If they're not there, then like there's a lot of things can go very dangerously wrong.
Yeah.
And also the ocean, like the dolphins. I've been wanting to go to Japan and try to stop this dolphin stealing. They just like take these dolphins, and it's a huge industry, and they scare them into nets and stuff. It's just very, very sad, because they're such sweet beings. Yeah. They shouldn't be treated like that.
Yeah.
I know. I keep bringing you down. You said this is going to be an upbeat.
All right. So how are we going to come back from the downside? Okay.
No. It's just the charities. Charity's good.
Charity is good. All right. Well, how about this? We'll end with a couple of generic questions that I tend to ask everybody, because the whole idea of our podcast is kind of like what you're talking about. Bring people together. Enjoy the things that we can enjoy together. So one of the things that everybody can enjoy is food. So we ask the ultra important question, are you a pizza person? And if you are, what kind of pizza is your kind of pizza?
Well, I'm super addicted right now to the Serafina pizza in New York with buffalo mozzarella on it. It is so good. Thin crust buffalo mozzarella and hot, like hot sauce or cayenne pepper, hot chili flakes, something like that, like spicy.
That sounds pretty good to me. All
Yeah,
right.
right.
All right. Food is covered. There's only two more. One is music. So you are an artist. Music affects everybody. When you are working on a painting or a piece of art, or when you're just trying to get into a specific headspace, is there a musical group or a musical style that you focus on that is your absolute favorite?
Oh, it's so tough because I like so much different music and different genres of music. But when I'm focusing, I put on high frequency music. And I would say I probably listen to that the most. So it's like it's the hertz, right?
Right.
And it's like the binaural beats go through your mind. And so I play that a lot because it gets me really focused and it also feels like very healing.
Makes
But
sense to
and
me.
I also really like piano classical music when I'm painting and stuff because it makes me feel like I'm like connecting with the ancestors in Italy, like just we're like with Michelangelo or something.
You're in the
That
Renaissance.
gives me a vibe for sure.
I love it. All right. And since the third one, since we are a comic-oriented podcast, and we've already talked a little bit about that, and you've got some interesting comics, if you had to choose a specific comic character that you could portray, who would it be and why?
Oh, probably Catwoman.
That's a fun one.
Because I have so many lives that I've lived, like I feel in my life, like I keep coming back. And like I feel like I've just lived a lot of lives already. So hopefully not too many because we only have nine. But
Yeah.
and also I'm like a cat, you know, like everyone always says that I look like a cat a bit. So Catwoman.
I like that. I like that. If I were to cast you, there was going to be a new
Okay,
film
yeah, tell
that
me.
was coming out, and we needed somebody specifically for this role that's perfect for this role. I'm thinking something a little more Canadian. There was a wonderful comic that has been out for a long time called Alpha Flight. And there's a character in it
Oh.
by the name of Snowbird. I don't know if you can see on this right there, that Snowbird,
Oh, yeah.
kind of
Oh, I'm totally
a
Snowbird.
very spiritual kind of based character. A lot of fun in that if you ever get a
I
chance to
love
look at that.
her.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I
But
love her. I could totally play Snowbird.
plus they've not done an Alpha Flight film yet,
I
so I
was just
mean.
gonna say, let's sell it. Let's get that going.
I like the idea. Well, I want to
Me
thank you
too.
so much for coming on to the podcast.
Thank you so
For
much.
those listeners that kind of want to keep track of you, I know you've got a couple of websites, thealessandrawilliams.com, alessandrawilliams.org.
I know, just a bunch of, I just had
Just
to hold
kind
on
of,
to them.
but if they really want to know what's happening with you, I thought I found you on Instagram, but it looked like it was a locked account. Do you have the best place on social media where people
Oh
can go
yeah, it's
to you?
called At Taste the Vino, like a sommelier, like wine.
I like it.
So Taste the Vino is my handle on Instagram. And I do the
Excellent.
most there. I don't use all the apps because it's just like too much
There are too
bandwidth.
many, yeah.
But Instagram, I update everything I'm doing all the time on there.
Excellent, excellent. Well,
Yeah.
when you have another project coming up, we'd love to talk to you again. Come back and see us.
I would love that.
That'd be excellent. And until then, much success to you, madam.
Thank you, you too. Nice chatting with you.